quite high, but it's
beautiful. Such great joy to be up here, and it's been too long, I think. I'd like to read from Papa Ram Dass, Bliss of the Atman. Everyone who is in the grip of struggle for the attainment of eternal values of life knows that life's fulfillment and its ultimate fruition depends upon the immortal bliss and peace of the Atman. He further knows that this unchanging truth can be his only when the mind is withdrawn from the external attractions of the world, only when he has conceived a revulsion of feelings towards pleasures of the senses, only when false cravings of his soul for the unstable and ephemeral things of life have ceased and disappeared. These are the necessary conditions for the realization of the immortal peace and joy of the Atman. The sages have declared there is no higher gain in this existence than the bliss of the Atman. When you have once found it, you are utterly free from the clutches of mental turmoil and the fetters of death and misery. Suppose a man has come by a perennial spring of nectar, which he can quaff to his heart's content, and thus satisfy the thirst and that parches his soul. Would he hanker after the unwholesome water of dirty ponds that brings disease and consequent pain and misery? If you would really enjoy the blessings of a true and independent life, then by a concentrated and sustained effort, seek the bliss of the eternal. Nothing else in this world can quench the flames of desire that rise and burn in your heart. Liberation is spoken of as the realization of the immortal divinity dwelling within you. Be intoxicated with the joy that never changes, that ever exists. Joy, bliss, and peace are your quest. Independence and freedom are your goal. If you have understood by ransacking the depths of your desire-ridden heart the true purpose of your life, you will surely have discovered that nothing short of the attainment of an immortal state would completely satisfy the innate aspiration of your soul. The passing glamours of life, the gilded pleasures that you pursue, are the will-o'-the-wisps that delude the mind and throw you into a prison of ignorance and death. Therefore, seek the eternal. Seek that which never dies, never changes, that which is your real spirit, the one deathless truth of your being. Do not be deceived. Wake up from the sleep of ignorance. Be aware of your eternal self. Tear up the veil between you and your God, and know that you and He are one. Declare with all the joy that you can command, I am the all-pervading, indestructible, beginningless, and endless truth, whose nature is perfect peace and bliss. I am the self-existent, all-powerful reality. I am the free, ageless, birthless, everlasting spirit. Disease, poverty, fear, and want have nothing to do with me. I am bliss, pure bliss, peace, pure peace. I am the light of lights. I am the primeval source of all things. I am God, and there is none but I. Meditate thus until you are inebriated with the thought of your divine state, until you merge and lose yourself in the limitless ocean of your immortal existence, and make this blessed life abundantly blessed. That I would read to you something that I wrote this morning. Entitled Purity. Purity is a quality of the divine being. You cannot create purity by being good. However, you can align yourself with purity by striving to be good, do good, think good. But when purity blesses you with its presence, it is so far beyond what a human can strive for through self-will that it will be clear to you that it is something far beyond your capability to create. My Guru Dev said that virginity is not something you are born with, but a state to be attained. She was, of course, exactly right. This virgin state is purity itself. When you attain that state of purity, it washes you clean of every lower force and state of mind. This is the true baptism. You are washed clean, purified of all past errors and darkness. Now you stand naked before your Creator. You are without blemish, not due to your own efforts, although you must willingly accept the grace of purity. But the purification rite comes as a gift from far beyond your own ability to make anything like this happen. If you have never received this grace of purity, believe me, it is a gift more precious than anything this world can ever bequeath to you. You may feel that what you have done in ignorance or through sheer will is unforgivable, but this is merely a trick of the ego. With humility and a contrite heart, all may be washed away and made new. It is a gift waiting for the receiver to make room in his or her heart and soul by turning away from the past, from darkness and error, and completely opening to the living light. In my speaking with so many people as they strive and struggle in their own sadhana, their spiritual practice, many people come up against things that they've done in the past, things that they're not proud of. I think all of us have it in our own past. There's things we would just as soon not have on the front pages of the newspaper or shouted by the town crier. And yet, in that humanness, in whatever lessons that brought to us, whatever experiences, whatever pain it brought to us and people around us. Nevertheless, it has brought us to the place where we are at today. And in this desire for yearning for realization, for becoming something greater than what we are, knowing something deeper about who and what we really are. In that state, everything that we have done, both what we think of as positive and negative, has all gone into making up that state of mind, that desire for realization. And this is the most tremendous thing, because even without fully experiencing what realization is, we feel it, we know it, we intuit it on some level. We know there's something wonderful, something great to be experienced. And yet we encounter this little human self, all of our past, all the things that we have done in our outward journey from God. Mother described the Om as the three-letter A-U-M. And she said, in the beginning, God was. And then God decided to explore himself, and so he breathed out the word Ah, the first word A in Om. And all creation sprung into being. And he saw that it was good, and so he wanted to preserve it. And so he breathed out, ooh, you. And everything became preserved in outward expression. And then at some point he decided he wanted to withdraw everything back into himself. And so he expressed the sound, mmm, and everything was withdrawn back into the divine being. And so you have this A-U-M, you have this outward expression going out, you have this preservation, and then the withdrawal. And in the going out and coming back, God seems to oppose himself. And yet we know from all the great masters that this is a delusive state, to think of being in opposition to yourself, thinking that anything can be in opposition to God's creative spirit. Ultimately, we have to say everything is part of that. And yet we read about Papa describing very clearly here that we should get rid of material desires, that we need to overcome them, that we need to put them to rest in order to know the pure spirit of God. And this is true. If we are consumed with the things of this world, if we are consumed with the worries and the guilt and all the rest of it, then we will not have the state of mind that can be so receptive as to experience this great state of God realization. This is the most tremendous proposition that's ever been put forward, that we have the capacity to realize the consciousness that has gone into the creation of all this vast universe. We can see it reflected in creation. We can see in nature the beauty. It can be in something as simple or seemingly simple as a flower or a leaf or a sunset. It can be a beautiful expression like that, or it can be the look on a child or a baby's face. And just what love springs from our heart, just what a feeling of purity we have when we see that. And so we get hints of it throughout creation. We get hints of what a tremendous intelligence, that there are scientists who can explore a tiny facet of nature their entire lives and never know the whole of it. This is what a tremendous intelligence there is that has gone into this creation. And you look at the beauty. You look at all the variety of flowers, all the variety of nature's expressions, and the incredible beauty that there is in this world. And it's just mind-boggling. So intelligence, beauty, force, the force of a volcano, the force of a star or a supernova, a nebula that gives birth to new stars. Just think of the tremendous power and force that is all around us. And these are all the calling cards that there is something tremendous in all of this. And that we may know the Creator's mind. We may know and tap in to that intelligence, that power that has gone into the creation of all of it. This is a tremendous thing, to think that we can open ourselves and know that. That we aren't just an ant crawling upon this small mud ball, the earth. That we may know ourselves to be in communion with, in fact, in oneness with, this tremendous, dynamic intelligence that has gone forward and created everything that is. If you think of a tiny aspect of the ocean, just a bubble, just a small droplet of the ocean, and that it's existing as long as it has some kind of definition to it, it's existing as a point of separation within the ocean, and yet it's made up of the same stuff as the ocean. And then one day, through circumstances, that bubble dissolves. And what's inside of the bubble joins with the ocean itself and becomes merged in the ocean. And in consciousness, that in that mergence, it becomes also consciously aware of the entirety of the ocean, of the vast expanse of the ocean. And in consciousness, this is what happens to you as the bubble of you, the little you, dissolves. Then it frees your existence, your Atman. That is the pure soul within you. And everyone has that pure spark. In Indian cosmology, in yoga cosmology, there is the Atman that is the pure aspect of God within you, your soul, the purity of your soul. And then there is the Para-Atman. And the Para-Atman is the supreme soul. It is the soul of God. And it is said that they are actually one in the same thing, only the Atman conceives of itself as just a point of consciousness, whereas the Para-Atman knows itself to be the entirety of existence and beyond. That when you merge, when you dissolve this little sense of self, you know yourself to be that blissful being. You know yourself to be filled with light. You know yourself to be a manifestation of love, of every quality that you can think of that's part of the divine principle is now yours. You are that, and it is you. And there is no difference between the two. Now, in the beginning, as we make our spiritual search, there may be times when we realize that we get a feeling for it, or we get a true experience in which we do dissolve this little bubble and we do merge into the sea. But for the real aspirant, for that one who is really called to a higher life, then it becomes a consuming passion to want to merge the little self into the God self, that nothing else will suffice, that everything of this world seems as dust, seems as nothing to you, in comparison to this experience that we seek on the inner plane. And so we must be willing to give up everything that we call our own, because that's what limits you, that's what creates this bubble that isolates you from the vast ocean of consciousness. And it is our sadhana, it is our spiritual practice, it is through chanting God's name, it is through Kriya Yoga, it is through deepening meditation, that we seek to dissolve this bubble and merge into the vastness of what God is. And we have to give it our all. We have to give it everything. But as I wrote about in this article on purity, when purity comes, when it's God's presence that comes in and absolutely wipes you clean, takes away all darkness, takes away everything that is not of the light, is not of purity, you know for a fact when that happens, it's something so far beyond you that you know that it's not you. You know that it's not anything that you've done that's allowed that purity to come. Now, you have to be willing to do everything in your power to surrender, to purify your body and mind and soul. But the actual quality of purity that comes into you is way beyond anything that you could do for yourself. And it feels like a baptism. It feels like being washed clean. And everything of the past now is just but a distant memory. You take the lessons, you learn those lessons, and you continue on. But you're no longer plagued by them. They no longer have an emotional charge for you. You now stand free. And in that freedom, you merge your little self into the great Atman, the Para-Atman of the Divine Being. And in that freedom, in that joy, in that love, in that light, in that bliss, you experience who and what you truly are. And it is a brand new experience in one sense, and in another sense, it's simply a recalling of what you've always known yourself to be, and that you were never not that. It's just you dreamed a dream. And in that dream, you saw yourself and felt yourself to be separate and apart from. you felt that you could make decisions, that you could do things that was completely mindless of the divine essence that you know yourself now to be. And now, as you go forward, having left everything else behind, you now experience yourself as that freed being. You are no longer limited by the things of the past. You no longer are called into a state of ignorance. There is no magnetism left to it. There's nothing that pulls you. There's nothing that stirs inside of you other than that divine principle that is ever active and awake inside of you. So now you have that freedom, the freedom of the ocean, the oceanic self, sense of self. Now, as that oceanic self, you never look back and say, oh, I wish I was just limited to being the bubble. You can express yourself as the individual. But now it's different. Because as you breathe, as you think, as you move, as you have your being, you know it's all an expression of the oceanic self. That you and that cannot and never were separate. But now you're conscious of it. You know it. And having broke the back of ignorance through your intense sadhana, now you have that ultimate realization. This is the greatest thing that can happen to us. And I can't think of a greater pleasure, a greater joy, than for us to be going together on this journey. That we support each other, we can love each other. You know, sometimes people get involved in the human drama, even within the spiritual group. I like this person. I don't like this other person. I want to be part of that. I don't like that. And the lists go on and on and on. And we need to really think about, what is my purpose for being here? Is it just to find fault? Is it just to complain about this person or that person? When we are disturbed by another individual, then let us first make that inner connection with ourselves. Let us really focus upon God. Don't give the other person so much power that you find yourself in a state of either over-attraction or revulsion. Make God the greatest element within you, the greatest magnet that's pulling you, not other people and situations. And when you're able to break that magnetic pull that happens around other people, whether you have an attraction or a repulsion, but you just feel you are God's own child, you are a divine creation, and you stand free in that. Now you know how to act. You know what to say. You're not reacting out of fear, out of anger, out of any of the smaller aspects that get created by the human ego. You now act out of your divine self, and you have that intuitive knowledge and clarity about what you should do. But more than anything else, see God in every other individual. And have you ever thought that somebody who has unlovely characteristics, they need more of your God thoughts than anybody else does? It's easy, as Jesus said, to love those who love you. It's easy to be nice to people who are nice to you. How much more difficult it is when God wears a terrible mask, or a small-minded mask, or anything else that can pull you into a delusive state of separation. So you think, first, I need to get right with God. I need to get focused on my deeper, my true self. Make that connection first, the Atman within me. And in making that connection with the Atman within me, now I expand and I feel my connection with all life. Now I can look at this other person with unlovely qualities and I can see that they too are a divine expression and a creation. And that if I can see the divine in them, I can help to awaken that divine nature in them. If they're in misery, if they're in suffering, you know, if they create suffering for other people, by definition, on some level, they are in suffering themselves. It can't be helped. Somebody who is happy, somebody who is well-adjusted, somebody who is anchored in the divine will not go out and just create problems for other people willy-nilly. They won't do it. And yet some people seem to delight in the misery of others. And they go after people's weaknesses. They go after them in every way that they can to get leverage over them, to feel better, as Sri Yukteswar used to say, that they cut the heads off of others so that they themselves can be taller. This is a terrible thing to do, but if you meet somebody who does that, first get anchored in the divine consciousness in yourself, and then, and you can do this through chanting, you can do it through seeing them enveloped in light, but see God in them. See beyond their faults. See beyond their foibles. See the divine nature that surely they are at the very root of themselves. At the very core, you go beyond all the obfuscations that they may present. And you will see that purity, that light that they surely are. You know, Krishna said of that divine principle within the heart of each and every person, you cannot burn it. You cannot drown it. You cannot destroy it. You cannot change it in any way. Now, this is a wonderful thing when we think of it of ourselves, because no matter what it is that we've done in our past, that purity is intact in us. We cannot get rid of it, not even if we tried. And so when we turn ourselves toward the light, and stop making mischief in this world through the ego, that purity is waiting to be awakened inside of it. But some people feel so bad about their past. They become preoccupied with that. And so that itself becomes an obstacle now. They need to let go of the past. They're making a god out of their past. They're making a god out of the darkness and negativity that they may have perpetuated in the past. And true enough, we should learn our lesson and be clear that that's not something that we want to repeat. But what we should be focused on is not the past and not the darkness, not the negativity, not the wrong things that we've done, but that we should be focused upon the light. We should be focused upon love and forgiveness. And a moving forward with life, that each moment is a fresh creation. It really makes life alive when you think that every moment is a fresh expression of the divine consciousness. It's the human mind and the human ego that looks at time and place and the progression of a life and sees a kind of sameness. It gets to be a dullness in the brain that doesn't see that every moment is a fresh creation. Every moment is filled with vitality, newness, joy, love, light, everything that we love about life. But how few people actually experience that? How few people are really walking around alive? Most, as Jesus said, are the living dead. They walk around, but they're not really living. They're not really alive to that divine principle that is inside of them. And so we let go of that past. And if we meet somebody with unlovely qualities, we rise above our own internal reaction to how they may be. And we wish them well. We see God within them. We chant for them. We recognize the divine quality that is inside of them. And it frees you. This is the great thing. You find out that you put yourself in a prison when you get bound by another person's negativity. I think it's an interesting thing that if you meet somebody who gets angry at you, you tend to get angry at them. Why? It's almost as if we feel compelled to match them in their ignorance. If somebody else is depressed, suddenly you feel yourself feeling down too. There's this almost inclination inside of us to match another person wherever they're at. But we don't do them or ourselves any favor when we do this. We rise above it. We let go of any attachment that we have, and we see the divine principle within ourselves and within the other person as well. When you think of them, just chant Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Until you feel that bliss, that upliftment, that light within yourself, and you feel it in them as well. You see that vibration permeating them, changing them, lifting them up, awakening all that is already inside of them. Now you are a blessing on this earth. You're not a curse. You're not adding to the weight of somebody else's darkness. But you are a light bearer. And in that case, now you are such a blessing for that individual. And as is with the cause and effect principle, you are also a blessing for yourself because you're focused upon God. And when you leave that other person, whether they choose to turn their light towards their face towards the light or not, you have faced towards the light. You are living in the light. And that will continue with them. I remember a young girl when I was in high school. And at the time, the movement was being a Jesus freak. And she was what was called a Jesus freak at the time. Everything about Jesus. And we used to have discussions. And I could easily defeat her in logic. It just wasn't logical, the kinds of things that she was saying. But you know, even though I could defeat her in her logic, that she had a glow on her face. She had a light in her eyes that I couldn't deny. It went past me somehow. I couldn't push it away. And I couldn't deny it. I didn't want to deny it, but I just remember remarking how unusual and wonderful it was what she had, because she was lit up from the inside. And when you speak the truth, and when you remain focused upon the light, no matter what the other person does, you will represent that for somebody else. And that will help to awaken the light in them, as she did with me. She definitely did. So let us learn to be a blessing upon this earth. Let us learn to pierce the veil of separation. And know the Atman, know that purity inside of us, and then rise up in the Para-Atman, the soul beyond the soul, the personhood of the divine image and likeness. And then to dissolve all sense of separation and merge into the divine being. It is really not far from you. It can seem so at times. But this is just a trick of the mind. It really isn't. It really isn't. And if you give your full attention to God, then you open the door to grace, and that purity will come in and baptize you and wash you clean. And you will never be the same again. And when you are washed through and through and through, and there's just nothing left of that, then what else is there but God inside of you? What else can there be? It cannot be any way otherwise. It has to be. And this is the truth. It's the truth that all the great masters have come to teach us, to awaken in us, to so surcharge our mind, our emotions, our bodies, that we aspire for it with every part of our being. And we open that door and we become one with them. And so we are a cozy group tonight, and so I thought that we would have some just time if we want to talk about sadhana and our pathway to God and learn from each other. And so I'd just like to open it up to whatever anybody would like to talk about. And how goes the day? How goes the sadhana? How goes your journey?
Tom, for coming, because we've got a really tiny group. And to have come from Hornby and to be such stalwart friends and fellow seekers. Yeah. Thank you.
Pleasure. I was trying to find a way to get to Victoria to see you when you were, and thinking, oh, the car is being used, I couldn't get away, and then Bruce called and told me you were coming here, and that solved all the problems. So I feel really blessed, really taken care of, and you know, to be in your presence here.
It's my great joy as well.
And in your home, you're such good friends.
It's so wonderful to have a spiritual family. Yeah. I think all of us, different times of our lives, we've all felt somewhat isolated and alone in our journey. And to some degree, I think that has to be. There's just a certain amount of, it's an individual journey in that sense. But when we can come together, support each other, love each other, have good food with each other, nice conversation, it helps to support and build us in our own journey back to God.
Mm-hmm. There's a young couple on the island who's very clear in on their own paths. Mm-hmm. And every Sunday morning early, they go to a hall, the New Horizons Hall, and they have a way, it's a meditation, they have a way of working with meditation, where with the slow conscious walk to start with. Mm-hmm. It seems to start, first of all, with coming into that state of clarity about every move that you make, and then the standing up and the walking, and there's no sound. Everybody walks very silently for half an hour, and at half an hour everybody seems to know it's time to sit, and so then we all sit for half an hour. And there's something particularly warm and really loving about meditating with a group like that.
Isn't that wonderful?
And for me, because I'm so kinetic, you know, so sort of physically active, the walking part is—it's a real challenge to walk that slowly. But it also is doing. It's a doing.
Right.
That really works for me.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I think is nice about an anashram, where they walk and chant at the same time. And there's a way of working into that pattern that allows you. And as Papa said, that you chant and chant and chant, and then finally you come into that still state. That's a wonderful thing about chanting. You can do it while you're doing anything else. You can do it while you're walking or anything in life at all. And it has that purifying, centering kind of effect. Yeah.
Yeah, but to do it in silence is very powerful too. Cloud Mountain, when I was there for the year, they had a lot of Tibetan yoga groups come through, and they would go out and they'd walk very, very slowly, being very mindful, both of their own physical bodies and how they're moving, but also then of the environment and sounds and smells, and just bringing the full awareness into the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, capturing perhaps a little glimpse of the divine.
One hopes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Everybody's sadhana is going swimmingly.
Well, speaking of chanting, I was telling Carlo, and I do the silent meditations on the Saturdays, I often will come away with one or two things that I've decided that for that month. And often they'll come to me kind of in the middle, and I'll actually write down, oh, I really must do this kind of thing. And one of the chanting more and just, not as a big chanting thing, but even if you took 5 minutes through the day and could do that five times, you would be increasing your the focus. So just even if there was, you're in the car for a few moments, or you're just trying, doing whatever. But it was interesting, and actually putting that into practice. Is that there are many times you would totally forget to do it, but when you would remember, and then your usual irritations would come up or whatever, it's very hard to keep compatible with chanting being irritated, or being, your expectations not met or whatever, like this little chant, and always it kind of just, the chant, it almost comes into saying, it's okay, let it go, it's okay, let it go. And you go back, om shi ram, om jai ram, and I've just broken this, or this just fell apart, or that, whatever, just om shi ram, jai ram, jai jai ram. It's not necessarily I must do more of that.
Because it purifies, another way of saying that, it purifies the mind, doesn't it?
It really, you can really see it happening. Mm-hmm. These other thoughts are coming in and your hands are going...
It actually works.
Yeah.
How about that?
That thought can't coexist, and you're going to keep chanting, so...
Yeah. I think with chanting too, and one of the things I noticed early on, the feeling, and I was at that time in my life, I wasn't a very verbal person, so I couldn't chant out loud very long, just a couple of minutes, but then it would internalize.
Yeah.
But just the feeling of the vibration, just Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. I'd start to feel the vibration of it, and that would continue. Once that got started, then that would continue even if I was doing it silently.
Yes.
Because that vibration would still get picked up, even though I was not singing it with my voice, I would still feel it in my body. And that was a peaceful, blissful feeling. If we attune to that and kind of get intoxicated, allow ourselves to go with that, then that's the fuel that keeps it going. And actually, we don't want to stop then. We don't even have to kind of remind ourselves to do it, because we like it, and we want to keep it going. So that kind of feeling, it's one thing to just be repeating it with our minds, but you start getting that feeling, and that's kind of the positive addiction, you might say.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just, Swamiji talked about that, which I thought was interesting. He said, you know, there's so many different versions of singing the Ram Nam. There's different songs, different tunes. He said, and that's all right in the beginning, he says, but as you go deeper with it, you just settle on one. And it begins to regulate your breathing. Never thought about that before. And it takes you, it will automatically take you into that deeper meditative state. Until at some point, the chanting just stops.
Yeah.
It's just stillness. The chanter and the chant have ceased being. And it may be just a moment, and you realize, oh, you're just in that. And then the ego mind comes back in and off chanting again. But you get that more and more to where you can just enter into that stillness. No thought, no, just a feeling of stillness. Great. Oh, I'm thrilled. That's what's happening,
Baby steps.
And the part of this can think, I've been doing this for so long, but it's almost as if on the path, and I think there's an element of God. It's a little bit like when we get older in our bodies. But I still feel young. I almost feel like life is just beginning, you know, and here I am, I'm this certain age, you know. But I think that's the spirit, divine consciousness is ever new.
Yeah.
It's always young. And I think there's something in our journey in this consciousness that we've been practicing and practicing, and then something hits us as if we've been brand new born again. We feel like it's little baby steps and like I'm discovering this for the first time. I remember an aspirant one time, she said, you know, she says, you always talked about God being everywhere, and she's describing experience that she had, and she said, but God really is everywhere. And then she said, why didn't you tell me? I mean, I know you did tell me, but
right.
You know, there's that element of it.
Yeah.
I got it in my head, I got it in my head, but I didn't get it until I had that experience. And I think there's a quality of that just continues to unfold, that there's that ever new element that we never get tired of it. And it always seems like it's brand new.
Yeah.
Right out of the starting gates. And that's so unlike almost anything else in the world. Everything has an expiry date. We get enthused about something, do it for a while, and kind of wears off, and we're on to the next thing. And this, we can get stuck in it, and usually because we're not challenging ourselves to go deeper. And that creates a sameness, but connecting with that divine consciousness, it never feels like a sameness. I remembered one time this bliss just welling up inside of me, and the thought, I wonder if I'll ever get tired of this. And I think that was maybe 30 years ago, and I've never gotten tired of it. Not even close. I just feel like a connoisseur who's only gotten deeper appreciation for it. Value it even more.
Yeah, but I wanted to just say something about the chanting. In the last few months, what I've had happening is songs will start repeating over and over. I wake up in the morning and it's right there. Yeah. All the words, you know. Hallelujah, Lenin, you know. And it occurred to me that, and I think because the thought for the day from the Nandashram deals so frequently on the name, that it occurred to me that if there was a way to shift that sort of repetitious thing into the chant, and you know, I can do it deliberately, but it's not like these other songs are automatic, you know, songs of the past. And
right.
And the words, and I'm not thinking about them, and the words start to repeat in my mind. And I think that would be lovely if what was actually repeating in my mind was, oh God beautiful, oh God, or, you know, like that.
Yes.
If that was automatic.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to turn that around.
It gradually happens that as we know, the subconscious mind is the kind of a tape recorder almost, you know, it just accepts whatever is introduced through the conscious mind and through the senses. As we continue to purify the mind with the chant, then the chant will start recycling back through, and it can pick up a tune like that. And I used to work at taking any tune and finding out how Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram could fit into it. It had a different cadence to it, and you'd figure out a little different rhythm with it, but eventually it would all fit, and then you could just take off with it.
Okay.
And it was a lot of fun. The other thing that I would do with music at times is if I had a classic one that would come to me, if it was a love song, I just made it a love song about God. Mm-hmm. And if it was a You Done Me Wrong song, it was a song about Maya and how got taken in once again, you know, by the mind and the senses, and darn it, you know, and broke my heart, you know, because I thought, that's okay. So that's another way of dealing with it. But I think you can take that same, and this is actually a very practical thing. If you've ever had those commercial ditties get into your head and you can't get it out, and it just goes around and around and around, just put Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram to it, and it will break it. Mm-hmm. You won't have that little song just going through your head over and over again. Now, if that ever worked out that didn't break it, you'd still be chanting Ram Nam, you know, you just have that stupid little song that you're having go around in your head.
Yeah. So charming. So it's like
if you just
holding
make
it as though it were.
Yeah. So it's fun that way. Mm-hmm. You make it a challenge. Okay, can I take that tune and can I figure out, okay, figure out how that could work with that. And then you just keep doing it, and the power of the name becomes more powerful than the tune. Now the tune can continue, and that's fine. You know, now you're doing Ram Nam, you're just doing it to a different tune. And that's fine. You're just, that way you're utilizing your environment to help you. You're not trying to fight it. You don't have to
fight
it.
It's sort of backing off from what Papa said about ultimately you'll just come to that.
And I think that will still be true. You know, ultimately that is what happens. You'll come to that. You'll have that one cadence. They'll take you deeper and deeper and deeper. But if something hits you around this world, I mean, you don't have to try to just fight to get rid of it. Go ahead and utilize it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's fun that way. It's fun.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of making it fun.
Yeah. Interesting, fun. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, good. Thank you.
That's like, instead of resisting and pushing against the river, you're basically saying, I acknowledge you and I'm just going to go with you and have some fun. Yeah. I find that Sri Ram operates on so many different levels. Like when I'm walking in the woods, I've taken to not wearing my earbuds and listening to a tape or something. And just... And then if I get tired of Shri Ram Jai on the hills...
Slow down the cadence.
And then sometimes I'll be by myself way off in the woods and I'll do the Muktananda. I'll go into the lowest register I can possibly go, Shri Ram Jai Ram. And just let that vibrate. Yeah. And I can feel it through my whole body. Yeah. And usually when you've been walking for half an hour, you're really energized anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's... So I'm doing my physical exercise. I'm operating on the Sri Ram level. Yeah. And then sometimes I'll just sit in peace. Mm-hmm. And just, if there's a nice bench or something, I'll do Kriya. You know, I'm a little slower after that. Yeah. But what I've really appreciated this last 12, 24 hours is realizing how much, because of my training and teaching, I'm in my head.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about my mother,
yeah,
they brought it to my heart.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other different thing. Mm-hmm. And having those joined together, mm-hmm, I've really felt powerfully close to her this last day because of that. Mm-hmm. And is that a common thing, that people get stuck in their heads? And because I've always been focusing on the asana, but I think the heart center is, you were saying, it's a good place to focus on too, right, at other times.
Right, both. Could you, master and mother and all the heart center, the ajna, the sahasrara, the crown chakra, those are the three primary places. But I think for many of us, the heart represents a place of pain, at least at some point in our life.
Yes. Yeah.
And because there's still an emotional charge there, we prefer just to go up into where it's clean and clear and not emotional, and we don't have to do that. But it's like a missing piece in the ladder, and we have to go down, and we have to resolve that at some point. And there will come an experience that will heal that place, and then we'll realize that the heart is like the sail. That's what gives us power. That's what gives us energy. The mind is like the rudder and helps to steer. And both are necessary, but to try to do it without the heart, this is the great notion around bhakti. As bhakti is that emotion, and it's that desire, and it's that aspiration, and to catch the power of that is so much easier than kind of just trying to trudge with the mind.
Yeah.
The mind itself is a hard way to go only with that. And if we catch the power of the heart, then the sail fills out and we're moving. We still have to steer ourselves in the right direction. But it's just, it lends such faculty to our whole journey then. Mm-hmm. And then it resolves that. I've seen people in their sadhana who have emotional pain and they just want that gone. They want to get past it, they want to get above it, but they don't want to have to deal with it at all. But I find they don't make the progress ultimately. Mm-hmm. It always comes back on some. If it's a fear, if it's a hurt, if there's a large emotional charge there, it will always interfere at some point. And so if we allow ourselves, okay, it's not that we get involved in a quagmire of emotions and we have to emote all over the place and all that, but if there's an emotional charge there, then we can take Ram Nam to that too, right in the heart center, and just start seeing Ram Nam to that pain, to that difficulty, to that anger, to whatever that is. And that vibration of that Ram Nam will go in and it'll start to change it. And we can deal with it that way. It's not like you have to go into it and drown. That doesn't do anybody any good. We don't need to be afraid of it either. So we learn to open that heart center up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It becomes a tremendous driving force.
It might start with individual love, and then it opens up to universal love and all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Swami Satchidananda. You know, one of his kind of things for measuring your progress, did your circle of love expand today?
Yes.
You know? Isn't that?
I hadn't heard that before.
And you know whether it has or not, you know.
Yeah.
It would, except for that person over there. You know, if they didn't treat me like that at the store, you know, I'd be fine today.
I'd be
you
right.
know.
But you can feel it when it expands.
Yes.
You can feel it when more people are included.
Yeah.
Or less people are included.
Yes. And you know that you feel better. You feel more purity. You feel when you expand. It's got all the good qualities that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we know when it shrinks and our circle shrinks and we feel hurt or angry or somehow disappointed and we get all drawn in, we're not at our best. We're not manifesting divine consciousness. We know that. So just to have that little check-off, you know, at the end of the day, okay, how did I do today? Did my circle of love expand today? And we may acknowledge that it's really difficult for me to love this person. You know, they seem to delight in making it difficult. You know, but it's not my challenge to change them. It's my challenge to love them just as they are.
That's very helpful to hold that as one of the last things you say to yourself mm-hmm. before you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Did my circle of love
yeah.
grow today?
Then if you can see whether it did or not, then if you can see, okay, for tomorrow, or can I see it in this moment expanding, then you've given yourself unconscious instructions to do exactly that and to continue with that. And it's not about the other person. You know, if we had to wait for this world to become perfect in order for us to experience God, you know, we'd be waiting a long time. Not sure we really want to set ourselves up for that. You know, so this world will be imperfect. It will have people who may irritate us or frustrate us or hurt us or...
Just plain annoy.
Annoy.
Yeah.
And my challenge is to every day expand my circle of love to include that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And who knows, if that person, you know, if they are a specialist in annoying people, to have somebody love them may be something they've not experienced in a long, long time. May actually, even though we never say a word to them, don't really have that big of an interaction, that person may change. It's possible. I've seen it happen. And isn't that what the great masters do for us, is that they see our best. They see us in our higher selves.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'll close then with this writing from Master. Also entitled Purity. I just happened to came up on the card deck.
Oh, wow. It's
yeah.
a synchronicity.
Yeah.
Somebody said the other day that, I think it was a quote from Albert Einstein, that God speaks to us through synchronicity.
Yeah.
Virtue and purity are not rooted in weakness. Rather, they are strong qualities that fight the forces of evil. It is within your power to choose how much purity, love, beauty, and spiritual joy you will express, not only through deeds, but in your thoughts, feelings, and desires. It is necessary to rouse from the deeper recesses of your consciousness the intuitive faculties of your pure soul. The power of habit is very important on the spiritual path. Keep a pure mind, and you will find the Lord ever with you. You will hear him talking to you in the language of your heart. You will glimpse him in the flower and the shrub, in every blade of grass, in every passing thought. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Matthew 5:8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So just as a final meditation, I just would like us to think of that purity in the heart. Just make connection to whatever degree feels good to do in this moment. It may just come as a hint that's there. It may come as a powerful flow, an expanding light. And let that purity just go out throughout your body, all your body cells. That tingling vibration that moves all the way through you and all around you in the auric field around you. And then just knowing that there's an innate purity in every soul and every aspect of creation, just hold this world mentally, hold it in your hands. And feel the purity of all the divine consciousness being expressed in this world. And hold that. Hold that in your heart. Hold it in your mind. And then go on feeling that sense of purity just expanding out. Expanding out into all space. Through the solar system, expanding out through star systems and this galaxy, expanding out as far and wide. As if you see a drop of oil onto a pond and then it just expands out. Just goes out and out and out. And you are that. Whatever you may have done in your life in the past or in past lives makes no difference. Because that purity is ever intact. No shadow has ever crossed it. No evil deed has ever touched it. It is your eternal gift. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.